often do you think you look at yourself in the mirror on a given day? Twice? 5 times? 20 times? Maybe more? And when you see a reflection, does it give you pleasure? Or do you focus on that little bulge of fat you zero in on right away? Or that pimple that seems to take up half your face? Seeing ourselves can reassure us that we're looking good and well put together. Or it can distract us from what's really important in life. And finding the balance is a challenge, especially when you're preparing for a wedding. And when well-meaning friends and family, not to mention the media, fuel that extreme focus on our looks. Our guest realized that the dynamic was really damaging her body image, and she came up with a pretty radical response to it. Kirsten Gries decided not to look at herself in the mirror for a whole year. She's a PhD candidate in the Department of Sociology at UCLA, and she's a body image activist and the author of Mirror, Mirror, Off the Wall, How I Learned to Love My Body by Not Looking at It for a Year. Kirsten, what a pleasure to have you on with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, this is just a fascinating book. And I think that, you know, you tackle so many really important issues that especially impact women. But really, there are lessons that anyone can take away from it. I found it really interesting that the real catalyst for this project was getting engaged. What did you realize was happening?
Well, when I was in high school and my first few years of college, I had an eating disorder, which I recovered from, and in the process kind of shifted my mindset from being a victim of these issues to being an activist about them. So it really surprised me and disappointed me when I was planning my wedding and, in particular, trying on wedding dresses, that all of that negativity and insecurity and obsessiveness was coming back, and I wasn't going to call off the wedding, but I needed something powerful to kind of push myself back in the direction I felt comfortable.
Well, and you realized that the wedding dress aspect of things, and that's supposed to be, you know, this magical time in a woman's life when you're feeling like a princess and everything, but you realized that maybe things were getting out of hand when you had just bought wedding dress number 4.
I will say that, you know, of the 4 wedding dresses, 2 of them were short and intended for the reception, but there was one big wedding dress purchase in the beginning that never should have happened. I bought a dress that was a size too small, thinking that I would lose weight, and that was a horrible, horrible way to start off that period of engagement.
Well, and you said that you had recovered from an eating disorder, and so, you know, happily, you were able to identify how this was impacting your image of yourself and really how much attention it was taking from the rest of your life. And you weren't happy about that.
I was miserable about it. I like to say that my vanity was in conflict with my values.
And what did that mean to you exactly?
Well, as somebody who's recovered and is now a body image activist, my values include health over appearance. They include, you know, living my life in my body instead of thinking about everyone in the world just looking at my body. And I also teach at UCLA, and I want to be a role model for my students of body acceptance.
Kirsten Gries is the author of Mirror, Mirror, Off the Wall, How I Learned to Love My Body by Not Looking at It for a Year. And we'd love to have you join the conversation as well. Can you imagine not looking in the mirror? Does that sound like heaven or a particular kind of hell to you? And have you struggled with body image issues? Have you tried to correct how you see yourself? And if you have, what did you do and how successful have you been? We'd love to have you join the conversation. And I'm sure there are questions about the logistics of Kirsten's project as well. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email at talk@WPR.org. Well, Kirsten, when I've told people about your book, Mirror, Mirror, Off the Wall, the first question they say is, how did she do it? And they mean it really literally. How did you manage to avoid mirrors? They're really everywhere.
They are everywhere. And I think studies suggest that the average woman looks in the mirror somewhere between 30 and 70 times per day. So it's a big part of our lives. And it's actually a fairly new part of our lives historically. We didn't grow up with mirrors in our caves, so this is a fairly modern phenomenon. And as as for me, when I started this project, it actually took me a month to figure out how I was going to navigate mirrors, both by covering the mirrors in my home and by training myself to look away if I saw a mirror kind of in the side view of my eyes. And I plotted my walking commute to UCLA around the most mirror-free route possible.
Because it wasn't just mirrors per se, it was any kind of reflective surface, anywhere where you could catch a glimpse of yourself.
Correct. And when I started avoiding all reflective surfaces, it really shocked me to find out how many of them I had previously been using to kind of give myself a quick checkout. So store windows are an obvious one. A shiny knife at the dinner table, that was a surprise. I guess I was checking for food in my teeth or something like that.
And one of the things that you had to do, I mean, really basic things, like in your apartment, you were able to cover them up, but you actually had to start going down the back stairs of your building because your lobby was completely mirrored.
Yes, I mean, a lot of businesses and areas that need, you know, some decorating to look nice use mirrors to make the room look larger, and the entire lobby of my condo building was mirrors on one wall.
And you also did some research into how mirrors are used by businesses and also in the real estate world, because you eventually were trying to sell your apartment and that you were talking about staging it with your realtors. And one of the recommendations is to put a mirror in the front hallway so people can literally see themselves living in your home.
Yes. It was really fascinating to me to learn not only how mirrors are used just in decoration to make a space look more beautiful, but how our instinctive vanity, or the historically specific vanity that we have today, is being used by marketers so that we envision ourselves using or buying products that we might otherwise just see kind of as anonymous for somebody else. But, you know, a great example is a billboard that I saw, Walking Height, and it was a really snazzy car, and there was a mirror that showed up with you once you walked past the driver's seat, so you could see yourself in this really snazzy car.
So suddenly you felt like, I belong in that Corvette.
Oh, yeah, you know, and it's a lot less expensive than the used car salesman who's begging you to step into the car so he can tell you how good you look in it.
Right. It's a softer sell, but probably as effective, if not more so. And going back for a second, because I'm always interested in the historical elements of things, you found out that it was really when mirrors became standard issue above the bathroom sink that acne became such a focus for people.
Absolutely. So Joan Jacobs Brumberg wrote this great book, The Body Project, which I've read maybe a dozen times now. And once she looks at the historical nature of our women's and girls' obsession with their bodies. And one of the things she points out is that, yes, mirrors used to be very uncommon. And in particular, working class and middle class Americans didn't really see mirrors very much in their lives. But when they did show up, something that had previously been, not something we worried about individually, which is acne, it became a really big deal because all of these teenage girls were seeing themselves in the mirror for the first time, becoming curious, and then, of course, becoming critical. And my favorite fact from that story is that's where bangs, the haircut with bangs came from. It was these young women trying to figure out how to hide their pimples. And I was like, I thought I was the one who figured that out.
You thought you were onto something long before anyone else.
Yep. No, I got scooped.
So it was really, you know, it really created a problem that, you know, nothing had changed. I'm sure people had bad skin, or however you want to put it, problem skin before, but it suddenly brought it to the forefront, and people felt like they then had to address it. And no surprise, a big industry grew up around it.
Exactly. And this is a great example of how our environment shapes our thoughts.
And, you know, towards the end of your project, you looked at some of the positive uses of mirrors, and we'll definitely touch on that later. But I want to go to the phones before we take a break for the news and get to Jackie in Drummond. Hi, Jackie.
Oh, yeah, this is a great story. About 7 years ago, my son got married to a girl from Chile, and we went. And I live in the North Woods. I never wear makeup, you know, and people do tell me I do clean up nice when I get dressed. But they made me. They made me, and I was in tears, get all made up and have false fingernails to the point that you can't even recognize me in the wedding pictures. And I was just wondering, this is a generalization, but do you think some of the South American and Spanish cultures just seem more tuned in to makeup and this whole machismo way of dealing with life? Because, you know, around here and in America, you don't see that much. But I tell you, it was really embarrassing. But I think it's pretty funny. Even to this day, they say, yeah, you should have seen Jackie when she went to that wedding. You didn't even know her.
Well, I wonder, too, though, if maybe they were trying to treat you. Because, I mean, I think, Kirsten, we'll certainly talk about this more after the news. You know, a lot of the stuff that was really stressful to you and was actually really pretty damaging was done with the best of intentions.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if maybe they were trying to treat Jackie to kind of, you know, like a makeover. And for her, it was torture. And to them, they thought it was, you know, the most fun thing you could do.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say, you know, I actually have roots in Wisconsin. And I think Wisconsin is, you know, I lived in the Madison area as a kid. And my little brother, I guess he's not so little anymore, Peter, goes to University of Madison. And Wisconsin is one of the more laid-back areas of the country. And doing my PhD in Los Angeles is a little bit like that trip to South America.
Right,
which, by the way, South American countries, Brazil in particular, have very high rates of plastic surgery.
Mm.
But going to a different environment can really shape your sense of being a normal woman, either wearing makeup or not, fake nails, fake breasts, etc. Our environments tell us what's normal, and I'm not surprised at all that traveling to a new place can have that effect.
Well, coming up after the news, we will talk much more with Kirsten Gries about her experiment of not looking at herself in the mirror for an entire year. Kirsten is a PhD candidate in the Department of Sociology at UCLA. She's a body image activist and the author of Mirror, Mirror Off the Wall, How I Learned to Love My Body by Not Looking at It for a Year. Join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234, and we will be back right after this look at the news. It's pretty hard in this culture to have a completely positive body image. Whether you're a man or a woman, there are expectations of what you should look like to be attractive. And even there's a correlation made sometimes between what you look like and how smart you are. It takes a lot of courage and determination to confront the messages that we all get and to work actively to change how they impact us. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. As she prepared for her wedding, Kirsten Gries was focusing on her appearance in ways that were expected and even encouraged. But as a woman who had experienced an eating disorder, she knew that it was having a bad effect on her. So she took matters into her own hands and decided not to look at herself in the mirror for a whole year. Kirsten is a PhD candidate in the Department of Sociology at UCLA. She's a body image activist and author of Mirror, Mirror Off the Wall, How I Learned to Love My Body by Not Looking at It for a Year. Kirsten, thanks again for joining us today. Thanks again for joining us, Kirsten.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
Yep, great. Thank you.
Great.
So we were talking about, you know, that a lot of this came out of that whole cult of the bride when you got engaged and were starting to shop for a wedding dress and things like that, and how you realized things were really getting out of whack. What do you think some of the messages were that really stood out to you that women get as brides as they're preparing for a wedding?
The biggest and most damaging message is that being a bride is the most important day of your life. When we start hearing those messages, we think this is the day I have to be my most perfect. And a lot of those messages are used to sell us things. So if it's supposed to be the most important, if it's the most important day of our life, then we need to look our best. We need to have the most perfect wedding dress. We need to have the perfect shoes. Things like that can be very intimidating and raise our expectations in a way that's difficult to fulfill. Besides, if our wedding day is the best day of our lives, is everything downhill after that?
Right, right. And I have been known to tell people, after I congratulate them, of course, when someone announces that they're engaged, I say, you know, try to spend at least as much time thinking about the marriage before you actually get married as you think about the wedding day. Because I think the wedding becomes this, yeah, this monster. And people really lose sight of the fact that it's just the start of hopefully a long life together instead of the be all end all day.
Yeah, and marriages, weddings are an important part of our culture. In most cultures, they mark a transition point where people move from one phase of life to the next. And when our communities of family and friends are with us to recognize that step. But weddings have definitely gotten to a point that is quite different from the way they used to be. And now I'm not saying that we should go back to the time when it was like a literal hegemon, like masculine handoff from father to husband. But the amount of money spent, for example, is pretty astronomical when you consider, you know, how much time a wedding actually, you know, it's typically a day, although now weddings are taking a weekend.
or longer. And Marcia on Facebook said, "Brava to Kirsten. I'm so dismayed how negative the culture of brides and weddings has become that I actually canceled my cable service because I couldn't stand the commercials about the awful bride show." So she wasn't even watching the shows. It was the commercials were enough to send her over the edge.
Yeah, and I didn't even have cable at the time. I still don't, so I can only imagine how it would have affected me.
Well, and so it may surprise people, after what we were just talking about, that when you became so aware of how the negative bridal culture was affecting you, that you actually then decided to add to your challenge to yourself of, besides not looking at yourself in mirrors, that you took a very long list of things a bride should be doing leading up to her wedding, as suggested by a bridal blog, and decided that you were going to do each and every item on it. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, I'm somebody who likes to challenge myself. I also felt like I was living with one foot in this world of bridal culture that I wanted to embrace. I did grow up as a little girl who saw her mother's wedding photos and wondered if someday I would look that beautiful on my wedding day. And I didn't want to completely give up that sense of specialness and also that connection to our femininity that our culture promotes. I didn't want it to be as exaggerated, but I wanted to experience it to the extent that I felt healthy. So what I decided to do was just tackle some of these insane expectations head on and write about them in a blog to really reveal whether or not they made any sense at all. I mean, I think one of my favorites that was, I just couldn't help but laugh, but there was one thing on this long list was that you have to exfoliate your elbows because soft elbows are a marriage must. And I was like, what? I mean, I'll exfoliate my elbows. That's not really taking anything out of my day, but are you serious?
Mm-hmm. As a marriage must.
Yep, exactly. My husband, I don't think he's ever noticed my elbows other than when he's snoring and I give him one.
Well, and it's really interesting because you enjoy fashion, you enjoy the creative aspects of makeup and clothing, and so you were really feeling like you were losing out on a lot of that enjoyment because you couldn't look in the mirror to appreciate your creativity or to even know if that new blouse you tried on looked great or looked horrible.
Yes, and that's where we see a conflict in our culture about vanity. On the one hand, modern culture is telling women that we should be proud of our bodies, that we should enjoy expressing ourselves, and I agree with both of those things. On the other hand, we punish women for acting, quote, too vain. So it's this double bind for women where we get punished for being too vain and we get punished for not being vain enough. So there's this confusing middle area. And I wanted to tease out what parts of that middle area felt authentic to me versus inauthentic.
And you really felt challenged also professionally because you are a sociologist and you are a body image activist. And so how these decisions you were making about interrupting those messages about body image and looking at yourself, how that was going to impact those other aspects of your life as well.
Absolutely. And I discovered a lot of things about myself that I hadn't quite put into words. So, for example, I consider myself a feminist and I teach sociology of gender classes. And once I started this project, I realized that I had this instinctive urge to look stereotypically feminine and fashionable when I taught a gender studies class, because I thought that my students would take my messages or the lessons more seriously if they were speaking to what they considered to be, you know, kind of a quote, normal woman. And that really, it was important for me to realize that. And then I really had to question whether it was bad or good to, for example, you know, try to look like a, quote, normal woman, and I put that in scare quotes, to try to get some of these messages across, because I was afraid that if I showed up at class looking, you know, kind of like a stereotypical feminist, which, of course, that doesn't even exist, but whether my appearance would shape how seriously my students would take these lessons about gender inequality and beauty.
We're talking about looking at ourselves and what we see and how it impacts us and how we can make more positive connections with how we view ourselves, both in the mirror and in our own minds, with Kirsten Greise. She's a PhD candidate in the Department of Sociology at UCLA. She wrote a fascinating book, Mirror, Mirror, Off the Wall, How I Learned to Love My Body by Not Looking at It for a Year. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'd love to have you join the conversation. And let's go to Frances in Rice Lake. Hi, Frances. Hello? Hi, Frances. All right. I think we lost Frances, but let's look at a couple emails we've gotten. I think it's looking at how we can use mirrors in a pretty positive way. We have an email from Jean in Rice Lake. One of the most wonderful things she got from Oprah is that every time she sees herself in the mirror, she will say an endearment like, "Hi, honey," with a wink or a smile. And Jean says, as a woman in her late 50s, she has found this very useful.
I love that. I think it's great. You know, what I tell people is the mirrors aren't the problem, it's how we use them. So, for example, when I came back to mirrors, I had to think about whether or not I could keep the bad stuff away, those negative comments I was making, and build some healthy habits. And that's a perfect one to start with.
And we also had an email from Laura. She says, growing up in a very Catholic home in the 1950s and 60s, she was taught that her body was dirty and not holy, and she really started to dislike herself. But one day, after she came close to being seriously burned, she realized that this is who I am, this is what I look like, and I'm good with that. And I think that's about as much as any of us can hope for, right?
Yeah, that's a really wonderful story. And, you know, I think that there are important messages about the body that can be taught in religious situations. And one of them is, you know, this belief that our body is a temple. And I find that visualization really helpful for a lot of women who do feel like their bodies are shameful, either because they're dirty or because they're, quote, not good enough. And we live inside of a temple, and it is our bodies.
I love one of the things that you found, and I think you were surprised yourself to realize this, was that you were really lacking and needed to develop a sense of trust in others during this process, because without being able to look in the mirror, you really had to trust in others to give you an opinion of your appearance that you could believe and follow. But what I found really interesting is that it was pretty clear that you didn't trust other people to look at you as critically as you would look at yourself if you could see your own reflection.
Yes, you know, this is one of those situations where we are often our own harshest critics. And as a perfectionist, I was looking for the harshest critics ever to let me know whether or not I was good enough. And that's a really unhealthy practice. So, you know, whether you're looking at a magazine page of a Photoshop model that doesn't even look like the actual model and thinking, I don't look like that, there's something wrong with me, or just searching for things in your environment that make you feel insecure, because that's a habit we've gotten into, those things are really unhealthy. But what I learned, I thought of myself as having really strong relationships and a lot of trust, but when I couldn't see myself in the mirror, I caught myself having this constant reaction to compliments, where a close friend, family member, my partner, husband would say, "Oh, you look so beautiful." And I would think in my head, "Oh, you're just saying that because you love me." And I
like that made it less valid.
Exactly. And so, I mean, it sounds so ridiculous when we really think about that kind of attitude. If the people you love and are the closest to you, the people you actually spend your life with, are the ones who think that you're good enough and that you're beautiful, for goodness sake, like, what more can you want?
Right. Let's go back to the phones and Stephanie in Madison. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi there. I really want to say how much I am enjoying this show.
Oh, I'm glad.
And I'm kind of coming to this same kind of process as your guest. I didn't catch her name, but I have lost a lot of my sight. I have some left, but it's distorted, okay? So it's much more difficult for me to see. And so I'm going through the same process. It doesn't do me a whole lot of good, really, to look in the mirror. You know, I have found I can remember what I look like, but I have, there is a trust issue of trusting people to, mm-hmm. you know, to tell you how you look. But also it's a control thing. I mean, one of my worst thoughts was, oh, somebody's going to try to put me in something where it's going to make me look really ugly or dowdy. But then I realized, I've had to really let go of a lot of judgmentalism. Mm-hmm. I realized what kind of a clothes snob I was, or appearance snob, because I would look at people. I'd look at, say, they had something dumpy on or whatever, and I'd make, on some level, make a judgment. And I can't do that anymore. I don't. It's getting me away from mm-hmm. that.
What do you think of that, Kirsten?
I think it's really common. One thing that is important to realize, and a lesson I learned through this process, is that the same snarky voice in our head that judges other women, we like to think that that's us projecting things on other women, but that voice creates a world for ourselves in which we're constantly reminding ourselves that we'll be judged in the mm-hmm. same way. So it's impossible to judge other women in that way without also making your life and your environment and your world a dangerous one for yourself. So that's something I had to learn on my own, and it sounds like you're starting to get to that point as well. A really helpful phrase that just, I mean, it's like my forever mantra is good enough is good enough. And you don't need everyone in the world to think you're good enough, but if you can find a few people mm-hmm. who will give you an honest opinion about, yep, that you're ready for your job interview,
yeah, right.
good enough is good enough, then you're set.
Carol posted on Facebook, "I took my bathroom mirror down for a remodeling project a few weeks ago, and I really love not seeing it. I will very likely not put it back up. The space could be better used as a chalkboard to write myself messages."
I love it. That's great.
And I'm sure they could be...
A lot of women... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say they could be great positive, body image messages, or it could just be don't forget to pick up milk, you know, really
Absolutely.
The whole range.
And, you know, a big part of my project, a lot of people confuse the goals of my project. They think that my goal was to feel more beautiful. And I say, no, you know, that was a nice side effect, but my goal was actually to balance out the amount of time and obsession that and energy and money that this the beauty obsession was sucking out of my life. So healthy body image, a lot of people think healthy body image is thinking that, you know, you love every inch of your body, or that, you know, if you were asked about your looks, you'd say you're a 9 out of 10 or something like that. But I argue that the most important piece of body image that we're not thinking about is the extent to which our feelings about our body shape the way we view ourselves overall. And that was my goal, to diminish that sense of the way I look is who I am, to feeling the way I look is just one small part of who I am.
And you also calculated, I think it was that you saved 90 hours over the course of the year just by simplifying your makeup routine. It wasn't, you didn't try to add up all the time you spent glancing in mirrors, but just by simplifying your makeup.
Correct. A lot of women have unconscious beliefs in the power of makeup. So when I started out the project, I decided I would still wear some makeup. I'm a sociologist, and if I'm going to test anything, I can only test one variable at a time. So instead of giving makeup up, I reduced it to just, really light sheer products that I could kind of smear on, with my hands. And throughout that process, I just started realizing that no one was reacting differently. Mm-hmm. And that was a really important message for me to have. And so, yes, by saving 15 minutes in the morning, because, it turns out whether or not you're wearing eyeliner, wearing eyeliner is not the difference between being successful in life and not. Sometimes we have to go without it to find out, though. And, yes, reducing my makeup routine by 15 minutes added up to over 90 hours in a year. And
wow.
We usually think about 15 minutes, but if we start thinking about those 90 hours, mm-hmm. These issues start becoming a lot more powerful.
Let's take a quick call from Joe in Broadhead. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say that I think, us guys run around, I don't think most of us, use makeup and so on and so forth, but probably some of us do, but if you would put yourself in a guy's place, if you had went on a date with them and he's all he's got a, how can I say it, he's covering himself up with I don't know, a beard to cover something up, maybe flaws in their face, so on and so forth. I guess my point is, sooner or later you're going to marry the person, and you should just, all you women are beautiful out there. It's just, you got to believe in your inner beauty and not all these, products that they want to sell to you and all that stuff. That is a billion-dollar industry.
Well, thanks for that comment, Joan. We're running short on time, so I want to give Kirsten a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, well, I think the points he brings up are wonderful. Yes, there is beauty within all of us, not because of whether or not we look like a model or an actress, but because we're unique individuals. And that's what true love is really about. It's about seeing somebody for who they are. I will add that a lot of research suggests that your body image affects your happiness so much more than your appearance does.
Mm.
So, for example, a woman's body image shapes the happiness she feels in her marriage by about 19%, and it shapes the happiness that her husband has in her marriage by around 10%. Mm. So this is not the way a woman looks,
right,
but her attitudes toward appreciating her body versus not can really affect the happiness of a relationship, and I'd love for that statistic to go away.
Mm-hmm. In just the last minute we have, and there's so much more we could have talked about. We'll have to have you back on sometime because there's so many interesting aspects of your project. But what's it like now looking at yourself in the mirror, Kirsten?
A lot of people want to know if I look at myself in the mirror and I feel more beautiful. And the quick answer, the easy answer to that is yes. I have a sense of calm about my body that I didn't have before. I'm more interested in answering the good enough question instead of the perfect or the best question. But I spend less time in front of the mirror than I did before the project because I realize now that I have more important things to do.
And would you recommend this kind of experiment to someone else?
I do. I think that a lot of women and men who struggle with, questioning the time and money and energy they're spending on their appearance could learn something by giving up mirrors for, a weekend or a week. I don't recommend it for people that currently have an eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Something like this can really affect your thinking, and so if you have an eating disorder, talk to a therapist beforehand. But the easiest tip I give people is, one, not looking at yourself in a mirror can be a vacation, and we all deserve that vacation of getting away from ourselves every once in a while, and if you're not able to remove mirrors in your life, I say go camping.
Great. Kirsten, I'm so sorry to have to end it here, but we have to get out to the news. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening on the Ideas Network.